So this is the front page of the exam for this year. There are 17 pages, normal conditions, closed book, no dictionary, calculator is allowed. I'm not sure if you need it. I can't remember. I don't think so, but calculator is allowed. Next, calculator is allowed, but from memory I don't think you really need it, but maybe if you, simple calculations you can do. 8 questions, each with multiple parts, 100 marks total. This is the approximate split. There's about 20% on network technologies. And similar, remember our quiz, where we asked about which technology provides this capability. That's the level of questions about network technologies. Not the details, but comparative type questions. If you look in last year's exam, we'll see shortly, there were some select the correct answer type questions, or fill in the blank space type questions. So a little bit about the internet. Not the internet protocol, but the new things we introduced. Autonomous systems, peering and transit agreements. So the structure of those internet service providers and so on. That's what I mean by the internet type questions. Only 10% there. Almost half on wireless LAN, so several questions about wireless LANs, details, and also on mobile networking, including some questions on the concepts of NEMO and ad hoc networks. Nothing complex, but essentially what are they? Or how do they differ from other technologies? And of some detail about mobile IP. You need to know the procedures for wireless LAN discovery. We'll give some examples by looking at last year's of joining a wireless LAN and, of course, basic access and RTS-CTS, including the frame types. So I may ask you, draw a picture illustrating the types of frames that achieve this. You should give the correct frame types. There's not many. There's only 6 or 7 different types of frames, maybe 8 or 10. Similar, we went through mobile IP in a detailed example. You should understand the procedures for discovery, registration, and data transfer. And of course, past exams are a good indication of the types of questions, and hence we'll use some questions from last year's exam to give some examples today. Any questions about the structure of the exam? Nothing too complex. We've only covered 4 topics, but in some of them more detail than others, wireless LAN and mobile networking. So let's look at last year's exam, and get you to go through some questions. Last year there were some topics that we covered in the lectures that we haven't covered this year, so 1 or 2 questions are not relevant. There were some short questions, mainly about network technologies. Fill in the blank space. Given a list of technologies to choose from, fill in the blank space. Something is a protocol that enables host mobility in the internet. What's the answer? First one. Let's go through some of them, not all. We don't have much time. Something is a protocol that enables host mobility in the internet. Mobile IP, you have the questions in front of you because they're at the back of your handout. Hopefully not the answers. Mobile IP. Number 4. Something is a wireless technology that uses an unlicensed portion of spectrum to provide communications over distances of tens to hundreds of meters. Wireless LAN. 802.11, wireless LAN, both are acceptable answers. That's wireless LANs or IEEE 802.11 as the standard. uses unlicensed frequency, and we're talking about tens of 100s of meters. Or another question may ask, okay, what uses licensed technology to support wireless across several kilometers? Now you have to think about WiMAX. 802.16 provides wider or larger area coverage over usually using different portion of the spectrum. We're not going to go through these. These are some of these you saw in the quiz. You can have a look at these. But it's mostly about the network technologies and understanding the differences between them. Something you can study in your own time. Some short explanations of what's the difference between transit and peering agreements. What's the answer? So now we're talking about the internet structure and how internet service providers make agreements with each other. There are two different types, transit and peering. What's the difference? Free. Which one's free? Peering. That is, transit is when, say, a smaller ISP pays a larger ISP for their traffic to transit their network, pass through their network. That's the normal structure. But two ISPs may make a peering agreement with each other to say, okay, I will carry your traffic if you carry my traffic, and carry it for free in most cases. So that's the basic difference there. So we remember we have tiers or different levels. The tier one at the top, tier two, tier three, different. You can think of different size internet service providers, local ISPs, national, maybe international. Some pay others for transit. Some have peering agreements with each other. What else do we have? A question about concepts on wireless LANs. What is meant by a collision? When does a collision occur? This is a good question. You need to be precise here. When does in a wireless network, when does a collision occur? A definition or a precise explanation? When signals interfere with each other? Very close. Okay. You know, it's more general. It's not about wireless LAN, just in any wireless network. So it's not specific about backoff or 802.11. In a wireless network, your answer was close. A collision occurs at a receiver when it receives signals from two or more transmitters at the same time or overlapping in time. So, importantly, it's at the receiver that a collision occurs. If two people an answer such as a collision occurs when two nodes transmit at the same time is not correct, because if this node transmits and another node on the other side of the world transmits at the same time, there's not necessarily a collision. A collision is when a receiver receives two or more transmissions at the same time. There's a subtle but important difference there. So some concepts about wireless networks and wireless LANs, a hidden terminal problem. That is, when we have two stations outside of each other's range, transmitting to one common station in the range of both of them. Those two would say are hidden from each other. As a result, they don't know when the other one is transmitting. So that's what the hidden terminal problem is, and that may lead to collisions at that intermediate node. I just want to go through more some calculation questions rather than the discussion ones. What is an advantage? Just one selected question. DCF, we have this contention window. We choose a random number for the back-off slots between 0 and CW. CW approximately doubles every time we retransmit. It starts at, say, 31. If we have to retransmit, it goes to 63, which is about doubling. What's good about that? Or what's good about a larger CW? What's an advantage of having a large value? That is, choosing a random number between 0 and a large value has an advantage because not having the same random number. That is, yeah, there are more options because we know, and in fact I think one of the previous questions alluded to the fact that a collision occurs if two stations independently choose the same number of back-off slots, the same random number. If you choose from a larger range, two stations choosing independently, the chance that they choose the same number is much less than choosing from a smaller range. So an advantage, large CW, less collisions, or less chance of choosing the same random number and therefore less collisions. Disadvantage, choosing a large random number means we may have to wait a long time. That is, this back-off is very long because on average we choose a larger back-off. Larger time waiting means more inefficiency because less time sending. All right, let's go. We went through the first part of this question in our example and you did it on your piece of paper. Let's do the second part now. So we did this during the lecture. Some of you have got the piece of paper with you. If not, you've got the handout. I've summarised the information here, or the important information. The second part is RTS threshold of 500 bytes. So remember back, this is saying draw the diagram that shows the operation of the wireless LAN DCF. So all those steps in such a diagram. The information is we have a data of 1,080 bytes plus a header. I've done the calculation. That plus that divided by our data rate gives us a transmission time of 164. So when we draw data, we'll know that it takes 164 microseconds. The question specifies the transmission time of ACK, RTS and CTS, all of 20. DIFF, SIFF, slot time, 28, 10, 9. Choose some random numbers. These are just from the question. RTS threshold 500 bytes. What does that mean? What's the significance of this RTS threshold? What does that tell us? I have 1,080 bytes of data I want to send. My RTS threshold is 500. What's going to happen? Why is RTS threshold significant? Something like that is correct, but incorrect. It is something like that, but you haven't given a precise answer. Why do we care about the RTS threshold? If you look at the top, you'll find that this is a parameter that you can set or you can change in your laptop wireless LAN configuration. What does it mean for us? RTS 500 bytes. And if you didn't get this, you would have lost a fair few marks because the question says, draw a picture when RTS threshold is 1,500 bytes. Draw another picture when it's 500 bytes. So you need to know the meaning of this or the impact of this, because the picture will change. Yes, it tells us when to use basic access and when to use RTS-CTS. If the data that we have to send is larger than this threshold, I have a larger large amount of data, then use RTS-CTS. If it's less than the threshold, then use basic access. Why? Because normally RTS-CTS adds these extra overhead of a small RTS and a small CTS. But that's relatively insignificant if the data is large. But if the data is small, the overhead of RTS-CTS is significant. Therefore, the idea, if we have large data, larger than the threshold, use RTS-CTS. If you have data less than the threshold, use basic access. Therefore, in this case, we're going to use RTS-CTS. Start drawing the answer. So on your piece of paper, start giving the answer. And you know the basic mechanism. Diffs, back off, RTS-CTS. Maybe there's one more thing that you need. When do they start? Client A has data to send at time 0, B at time 160. So I will get you started. A is going to start first. The diffs, you may not be too clear, but you should understand the first thing we do, the medium must be idle for the DCF into frame space, diffs, 28. Then back off. How many slots? A chooses a random number of 7. Seven times 9. Each slot is 9 microseconds, the slot time. The back off counts a whole number of slots. We must go 9 times 7 is 3. Would bring us to 91 microseconds. 28 plus 63. Keep going. Diffs, back off, since we're using RTS, send the RTS. Between frames, there's always a short interframe space. So after you receive a frame, wait the short interframe space, respond. Our RTS frame, request to send. We're sending to the access point. Takes 20 microseconds, so it brings 111. Who received the RTS? Who? In fact, in this, in the setup of the question, A and B are hidden from each other. Only the access point receives the RTS. B is too far away to receive it. So once you've started transmitting, in all cases, the time between frames, that is, you receive a frame and you need to respond, whether it's a CTS, whether it's a data or an ACK, there's a short in-frame space. So don't forget that time. Receive, wait this time, immediately then transmit the response. Finishes at what time? What's the answer? When's a CTS finish? When is it finished to be transmitted? No. When is the CTS finished? 1. All right. How long does this take? Okay. Okay. Good. Keep going. On 41. SIPS is 10. So we need to follow the time as we go. That is, if we finish transmitting RTS at 111, we assume that AP finishes receiving at 111, that there's no propagation delay. Plus the SIFs of 10 brings us to 121, plus transmit the CTS, which takes 20, brings us to 141. Who receives the CTS? A and B. And that's important. Because both A and B are within range of the access point. Even though A and B are hidden from each other, they're close enough to the access point to receive that frame. It tells A that it is clear to send its data. It tells B that someone else is about to send. A field inside this packet, inside this frame, indicates how long that other person is about to send. So, we would defer for that period. How long should we defer for? Or how long does B know to defer access? Keep calculating to get the answer. So we know with RTS, CTS, if someone receives the CTS, they will defer, and for the right amount of time. But what is that time? Well, keep going with A. See what A does. Receives the CTS, sends the data, ACK, and see what time that brings us to. This is a question from last year's exam. between frames, we always have a short interframe space. I receive a frame and have to send one back. I have to wait that short interframe space. It gives me enough time to change my hardware from receive mode into transmit mode. Because a wireless device normally can either receive or transmit. The hardware is implemented to either receive or transmit. We need to change modes. You don't have to draw these red lines. This is just indicating who is receiving a frame. It's not necessary. It's just to help to illustrate in this case. But you do not have to draw in your answers that. You should be able to recognize that easier. Note that in the lecture notes, and you may see different in the lecture notes and what I've drawn here, even on different examples, check this time. In this case, I drew that the defer starts after the CTS is received. Well, in fact, we're not transmitting, or we're deferring as soon as we start receiving this CTS. That is, if we're receiving a frame, we cannot do anything. Now, whether we call that defer or not doesn't really matter. What's important is if we're receiving something, we cannot try to transmit, we cannot do back off, we cannot do diffs. We receive the frame. In the lecture notes, I drew defer starting at here and go through. That is, we're not doing anything in terms of transmitting or diffs or back off. Importantly, after we've received this CTS, inside that frame is some duration field. It tells us how much more time do we have to wait before we can try again. By try again, I mean do the diffs, back off. Because in fact, at time 160, which is somewhere around here, B had data to send. The question was set up at time 0, A had data to send. At time 160, B had data to send. Now, the important thing here is when we receive the CTS, inside that CTS is a field that tells us the duration, or when do we have to wait till before we can start to try to send. What is that duration? What is the value of that duration? Who's got the answer? Well, it's simply this plus this plus this plus this. Because the idea is that the CTS tells B someone else is about to send, and this is how long they're about to send. Don't do anything for that time. Defer for that time. And that time should be identical to the time it takes the other person to transmit their data and get an ACK, which is the short interframe space plus the data plus the short interframe space plus the ACK, which is whatever, 10 plus 164 plus 10 plus 20 is 204. So I'll write here, just to indicate that meaning, after receiving a CTS, B knows it has to defer for another 204 microseconds. There'll be some value in this CTS packet that tells us 204. Because SIFS takes 10, which is 141 to 151. Data takes 164, which brings us to 315. SIFS takes 10, which is 325. ACK takes 20, 345. This is the running time. So the difference between 141 and 345, 204. During this period, B doesn't even try to send. It just assumes someone else is doing something. It doesn't try to check if someone's doing something. It just assumes they are. Who got that answer? That is, who got to 305? Okay, good. Yeah, all right, don't forget the SIFS. After which, B sends its data. Diffs, back off, RTS, CTS, data, ACK. And in this, it's simple to do that. Question? Defer is just meaning the time at which that station will not try to transmit. Defer means wait. Do not try. So, as you see in the lecture notes, I've drawn it from here. Because as soon as we start receiving something, we cannot try to transmit. So, from here or from here, either one is correct. What's important, or the most important thing, is when does it finish? When can we try to send? So I don't care whether you draw it from here or from here. It's the same because we're receiving, we cannot try to transmit. I assume that. Maybe this one's better because it indicates after we receive the CTS, there's some time that we have to wait. But either one is correct. What's the time when we receive the last ACK? Try and calculate that. Got the answer. Who's got an answer for the last time? Okay. Six plus. Okay, your program's correct. Just need the timing. Okay, someone else has got that same answer. Remember, all right, on my diagram, the black things are frames. The blue things are nothing. Time spent doing nothing, just counting at the local node. That is, here, we're not sending anything. My computer is counting some timer and checking whether someone else is transmitting. If no one is transmitting for 28 microseconds, I move into the next stage. So I have an algorithm here that starts counting a timer again. Well, actually, it chooses a random number, 7, and starts counting down. I need to wait for 63 microseconds. And during that time, there should be no one else transmitting. So that's what my computer is doing here. I've just illustrated this with these blue boxes. At this point, we transmit an RTS frame. Now, we transmit that RTS to the access point. Destination, access point. But remember, in wireless, everyone within range receives its broadcast medium. Even though I'm sending to one, everyone else around receives. If I ask you, what is your name? I'm asking one person, everyone else hears that question. So the other nodes take advantage of that, especially the CTS. CTS is sent from AP to A. A receives it, but also B. B checks that message and realizes someone else is about to send. Short interframe space is just a period of time. It's not transmitting anything. Defer is just a period of time. There's nothing happening in terms of transmit-receive. It's just a counter in your... So, several people got the answer. 6, what is it? 654? 654? Yes? Good. Isn't it? 654. So just be careful, don't miss spaces. Diffs, back off for 3 slots, RTS, short interframe space, CTS, data, drawn the short interframe space. That is, between here and here, there's a short interframe space of 10. Here and here, 10 and 10. So you just have to add up those time intervals and you get the total time. Any questions on this one? This was one of the easier scenarios because there were no collisions, which is the intended operation with RTS-CTS. If you can't read this, diffs, back off, RTS, CTS, data, ACK. I'm not going to write the times. This one. Next question. If you haven't finished it, sometime later, just complete the additions. Check online, there are answers. But let's move on to another question so that we can try some different things. Question 3 in the exam. All right, one more minute. Wireless LAN. Then find question 3. Check if you're missing something. Data is 164, not 64. So 614. Maybe you're missing one SIF somewhere to make it 654. Question 3. A and B, easy. Let's move on. Look at part C, or the setup to part C. We have a router with a wired connection to a wireless LAN access point, which has a wireless link to our laptop. Laptop running mobile IP. It just turns on in a foreign network. That is, this router has a foreign agent. From the mobile or the laptop's perspective, it's in a foreign network. Just turn on the laptop. What happens? The first question is, the first step of what happens is that the laptop needs to discover the access point. How does that, or what are the methods that the laptop can do that? How does the laptop discover the access point? Send. Who sends a beacon? Access point sends beacons periodically, sending broadcasting. That is sending to everyone within range. Sends out a beacon, let's say 10 per second. Sends beacons. If anyone receives the beacon, automatically they've discovered that access point. That's what we'd say is a passive discovery. The client is not active in doing anything. It just, when you turns on, it just waits until it receives a beacon. And then it's discovered the access point. Alternative, the other approach is to be specific. What's the other approach? Active approach. What happens in the active approach? How does the client actively discover the access point? Request. That one can be drawn a little bit easier. Client access point. Client was just turned on, it broadcasts a probe request. It probes for access points. Sends out a message saying, is there an access point in range? if an access point receives a probe request, it should respond with a probe response. That's an active discovery approach. Once we receive the probe response, we know the access point. So they are the two methods. And we see there are two general methods. That is, same concepts apply in mobile IP discovery. You could describe them, or you could use a diagram to illustrate them there. So we've discovered the access point. We know that there's an access point within range. What's the next thing that our laptop does? It wants to join the network. How does it do that? We associate with that access point. And you just need to remember the procedure for association. Send, in fact, be careful. First we authenticate. So we send an authentication, AUTH, authentication request. Sends back a response if everything's okay. Authentication response. Then associate, ASSOC, associate request. Response. These diagrams are in your lecture notes somewhere. And the answers here as well. But you just need to remember this procedure. Joining, either you receive beacons or you send a probe request and get a probe response. Discovery. Once you've discovered an access point, you join the network, which is in fact two steps. Authenticate, associate. And we assume everything worked okay. That is, authentication was successful. Access points may say, no, you're not allowed to use my network. You need to provide some credentials. That is, we separate the process of authenticating, providing credentials, and informing the access point that we're going to associate and use that. We could potentially authenticate with multiple access points and associate with just one. So it's nice to separate the procedures which perform different functionalities. That's easy. What's the next step? Describe two methods a laptop to discover the mobile IP foreign agent. If you go back to the first diagram, there's a router, access point, client. We've discovered the access point, we've associated with the access point, but what about the router or the foreign? That is, my laptop knows there's an access point and I've associated with that access point. But in fact, that access point is connected via a cable to some router downstairs. That router is my foreign, or is a foreign agent. But how does my laptop know which router in that network is a foreign agent? There's some IP network. There are many devices attached to the SIT IP network. I've associated to one access point. But now I need to know which computer on the IP network of SIT is a foreign agent. How do we discover the foreign agent? Router advertisement. Same concepts as discovering an access point. Different types of messages, but same concepts. Active and passive. The passive, the foreign agent periodically broadcasts what's called router advertisements, saying, I am a router. Active, we send a request in search for a router and receive a response back. Let's continue drawing. So, C, AP, and somewhere on our network is a foreign agent or a router. This was active discovery of the access point. That's layer 2 connectivity. That means we can send data from laptop the access point. If I call my IP subnet and my laptop, this is some IP. There are other. By discovering and associating with the access point, it means I can send packets on this IP subnet. But I don't know which of these hosts is my foreign agent, which of these nodes is my foreign agent. So, similar, we can have active discovery. Router solicitation, which is like a pro request. Completely different type of packet, but same meaning. I'm looking for a router. I'm looking for a foreign agent. Broadcast it. The router, which is the foreign agent, responds with a router advertisement. I am a router, and in this case, the router is the foreign agent. They are the one, same device. That's active discovery of a foreign agent, or active discovery of a router. So, same procedure of discovery is occurring, but at different layers in our stacks. The first one is at layer 2. Just discover the access point, the link level communications. But then we, layer 3, discover the router that we can communicate with. The alternative, the router periodically broadcasts to everyone in its IP subnet router advertisements, saying, I am a router, every 1 second, I am a router. I am a router, and so on. Sending an advertisement to everyone. So that passive approach would be to not do this, just wait, give an advertisement. So that's an alternative. I'm not going to illustrate it here because it's harder to, it mixes things up. Once we've discovered a router, what do we do? Register. And register involves which nodes, which computers or which devices is registration between. Be more specific. All right, let's make it easier. Let's be clear. This router is a foreign agent. So I say router or foreign agent, it's the same device, same thing. So this laptop is our mobile node. Somewhere on the internet, there's a home agent. Registration is between these three devices, or involves these three devices. Mobile node, foreign agent, and home agent. The idea, mobile node tells the foreign agent or asks the foreign agent whether it can visit its network, and if so, informs the home agent where it is. You tell your home agent where you currently are. Draw the picture that shows registration. So continue with this diagram, but show registration. And then I'll come around and check. You need to have correct answers to get your name ticked off today. You don't. It's all right. Everyone's here. Because I know you'll just copy website. And I know you have the answers in front of you. It's of no use. Registration procedure. You need to register with the foreign agent and the home agent. So hard, it's or in terms of the set of messages, you see all are really request response, different types, different meaning. Request a router, get a response. Request an access point, get a response. Request to authenticate, get a response. Associate, get a response. Registration, send a request, get a response. But importantly, between who? Who sends the request? The mobile node wants to register with the foreign agent and home agent. Draw the registration procedure. Okay. Let's explain the registration, because if you don't know, then you don't know, you have to put your notes. So let's explain what happens. C is my client. Be more general, let's call it a mobile node. I've already discovered my foreign agent or the router in the network that I'm visiting. Register is to say, to tell the foreign agent, I want to join your network, and also tell your home agent, where are you visiting? Tell your home where you currently are. So registration involves three entities: mobile node, foreign agent, home agent. So be careful. Mobile node tells the foreign agent, I want to register. That's REG. Registration requests. They're all request reply. I want to register and join your network to the foreign agent. The foreign agent says yes, that's okay, and sends the registration request to the home agent. Two different messages being sent there. It's not going from here direct there. The way that I draw these diagrams is that the arrow indicates who receives it. This message was sent by the mobile node, received by the foreign agent. It may have went through the access point, but it wasn't sent to the access point. This message, sent by mobile node, received by foreign agent. Foreign agent looks at it, does some processing, and then sends a similar message to the home agent, saying, this is saying, I want to register with your network, please tell my home agent. It tells the home agent. The home agent now knows where the mobile node is, because it knows it's with the foreign network of the foreign agent here. And then reply. Registration reply, which is like an acknowledgement saying, yes, everything's okay. So they were the easy parts of this question. Now comes the hard part. Any questions so far? Okay. And then a reply comes back. Reply. I'm not writing. Any questions? Not yet. Okay. So I've hidden the access point. Sending from my laptop via the wireless LAN to the access point. The access point sends via Ethernet to the router. That detail of the communication inside that subnet I've hidden from this diagram. That's the difference between layering. That is, I'm sending a message to the foreign agent. The way that it gets there depends on the specific technology used. If it's wireless LAN, it goes to an access point and then goes across Ethernet. But if it was a 3G network, that would be different. So the details of solicitation from here to here, I've hidden from this diagram because it depends upon the network technology. Same with these messages. How do you get this message from here to here? It's all the way across an internet. I haven't shown the intermediate routers. Mobile node could be my laptop. Foreign agent could be the router downstairs on the third floor. Home agent could be somewhere in Australia. So even though it looks close, that gives no indicator of geographical or network distance. It's just showing we send a message across an internet from here to here. When we receive the reply, we have registered with the foreign network and we've told our home agent where we are. We can now start receiving and sending data from this foreign network. We've omitted to show the details, the care of address and so on. We may see that in another question. But the last question here, part G, I think. How long does it take? Well, what's the minimum time for all this to occur? The minimum time from when we switch from the old wireless LAN, from when we switch on our laptop. Remember, we turned on our laptop, we discover an access point, we authenticate, associate, We discover a foreign agent. Sir, minimum time for all that to take. Given to send a message to the access point is 2 milliseconds. Access point to foreign agent is 1. And from foreign agent to home agent is 10. And same in opposite directions. Calculate that. In other words, laptop to access means the time to get the authentication request from here to here is 2. To get a response back is 2. So this takes 4 milliseconds. This one will take another 4. How long do these take? So start to put times to how long each step takes, to see how long it takes to hand over from one network to another. About the details of this question, just deal answer for this scenario that we've gone through in the example, that is probe request response, router solicitation, registration reply. How long does all that take? Laptop to access point 2, access point to foreign agent 1, foreign agent to home agent 10. Two people have 44. Anyone else? 44. All right. Let's try. Client to access point, probe request, 2. Send a response back, another 2. Authentication request, 2. Response, another 2. Associate, 2, 2. So we're assuming there's no time from when we receive a response to sending the next message. So that's, so far, 8. No? 12. So far. Just the wireless LAN part of it. Now, we send a router solicitation to the foreign agent. How long does that take? How long does that take? Router solicitation from mobile node to foreign agent. Anyone with an answer? Just the router solicitation, that first message on the second diagram, 3 milliseconds. Why? Because if I draw my network, a foreign agent or the router, an access laptop. This is the wireless LAN. This takes 2. This is the access point to foreign agent. The Ethernet part takes 1. We'll also draw there. So that's a way to visualize the time or the delay across the network. So this message takes 3. 2 plus 1. Or goes from here to here. Takes 2 to get to here, plus 1 to get to here. Response will take 3. Registration request will take 3. This request from foreign agent here to here takes 10. Total is what? 20 plus 12 plus 12 is 44. Like they said. Just to give an indication. of the time it takes to do this as an example. But I think we should move on, so we have one more question to... We can cover one more question. Which question? You can do question five in your own time. We don't have enough time. Let's just finish question four. We've registered. We've set up and we've registered between our mobile node to the foreign agent and home agent. We have different IP addresses. Mobile node home address, care of address, home agent address, foreign agent, correspondent node. Now, thinking for the data going from correspondent node to mobile node, CN to MN. In the IP header, what's the source address of the packet sent by the correspondent node? From the correspondent node. The source would be that of the correspondent node, correct? We have a correspondent node. Somewhere there's a home agent, somewhere there's a foreign agent, and associate or registered with that is our mobile node. Mobile node has a home, IP, and a care of address. And those addresses are given in the question. We're sending a packet from here. Source? Of course, the source is that of the CN. The CN sending the packet. Correspondent node knows nothing about the mobility of that node. That's hidden. It's just another computer on the internet sending to some destination. Source is that of the... This value. Destination is... Which of these? Anyone else want to guess? What's the destination? Mobile node, home IP, care of address, home agent, foreign agent, or correspondent node? Which of the five is... Correspondent node is sending. It is the source. Who is it sending to? We're corresponding between my laptop, the mobile node, and some web server, the correspondent node. Correspondent node is sending me a packet. Correspondent node is the source. Destination is laptop. It's normal mobile node home address. Remember, the correspondent node doesn't know about the mobility of the mobile node. All it knows is its original address. Destination 63 14 23 94. This one goes across the internet. Where does it go to? Goes home. It goes to the network 63 dot whatever, which will be the home agent, because this is the router representing the home network. That's just normal internet routing. So it would come to here. So the next, an IP datagram sent or forwarded by the home agent. So what happens, it comes here, home agent recognizes, here's a packet destined to mobile node 63 14 23 94. I know, because previously that mobile node registered with me and told me it is away and is in fact visiting a foreign network represented by the foreign agent. So it keeps that information in its mobility binding table. One of the previous questions was about mobility binding table. And recognizes it needs to forward that datagram to the foreign agent. And this is where the tunneling occurs. It puts this packet, if I draw it there, with a source. We're almost finished. And a destination. It takes this IP packet or datagram and puts it inside another one. So adds another IP header. So this is the data of the outer IP. One inside another. IP header, which is the original one, and the outer IP header. This is coming from the home agent going to the care of address. Now, in the example, in this question, it's slightly different than the example last week. In this question, the care of address and the foreign agent are different. In last week, I said they were the same. Either case are possible. That is, what is the care of address? Sometimes we set it to be identical to the foreign agent. We send this so it goes in this direction across the internet. Foreign agent receives it. Foreign agent knows this care of address is a visiting mobile node. So the answer here, source would have been 63.14.23.13, destination 103.3.22.46. Or in a different setup would be also the foreign agent address. If that comes to here, foreign agent realizes this packet is destined to a node visiting my network. Remove the outer header, look at the inner header, and we see that. It's destined to 63.14.23.94, which is the home address of this mobile node which is visiting my network. Therefore, it sends it directly to there over the wireless LAN, or over the Ethernet and wireless LAN. So the last part here, the datagram sent by the foreign agent is this original IP packet. Source address 102.16.100.4, destination 63.14.23.94. Original packet was sent to the home agent. Home agent puts that inside another packet, which was then sent to the foreign agent. Foreign agent took the original one out of that and sent the original one to the mobile node. In the other direction, in the other part, it's much easier because it goes direct. So part three, the source and destination is identical to part one. It's this packet. And that's what we require. From CN's perspective and MN's perspective, they are sending packets using the original source and destination addresses. If the mobile node was in its home network, we would still see these two addresses. If it was in another foreign network, we'd still see these two addresses. Doesn't matter where it is on the internet, between the mobile node and CN, the packets that they see will have these two addresses. And that's what mobile IP is trying to provide, hiding the mobility from the application. So this is what we call tunneling. We put one packet inside another, referred to as tunneling, and it's from home agent to foreign agent. And that is all we have time for today, and a good place to finish. Just a selection of questions from last year's exam. You can go through the other parts, the parts we've skipped, and you can also look at previous years. Note that in some previous years we covered some different topics. So if you see a question which is not about a topic that we've covered, then of course ignore it. the topics we've covered: network technologies, the internet, wireless LANs, mobile networking. Enough for today. Exam is next week. If you have questions, come and see me. I'll be in my office most of this week and next week. Otherwise, I'll see you. Most of you will see you on Friday, okay, in the next exam. Lab exam, the first exam.